She grabbed for her binoculars. It was a bulk carrier, usually used for transporting goods. Shipping containers from China were constantly arriving in the coast's ports, but this one was leaving, with only a few passengers on top. The men and women were armed, and drones hovered over the water, catching up to the vessel. She traced their trajectory and found the massive warehouse as the fog lifted and broke apart momentarily. She was too late. They'd moved them onto a boat. She needed to sneak into that warehouse and find out where they'd been taken. The car was on its last legs, the tire rubbing against the bent wheel well. She could see the black truck, parked along the side of the road ahead. It was time to stop messing around. Kendra had to find out what this Miller character knew. As she veered off the road, steering her damaged car to a halt, a white van raced toward her. It slid to a stop a few yards away, and the driver jumped out, using his door for a shield as he pointed a gun at Kendra. "Get out of the vehicle!" he shouted, motioning with his pistol. Kendra nudged her door open and jammed her hands above her head. The fog was rolling down the side of the cliff, inching towards them, and she noticed a glint of a gun behind the white van before seeing Andrew Miller's head. His eyes went wide as he recognized her, and Kendra tried to stay calm as she decided what to do next.
"Good. Now slowly take your gun and set it on the ground."
The man spoke more softly now, confident of his actions. His voice was slightly muffled from the respirator over his face. She bent at the knees, placing the Glock on the street.
"Good. Kick it over."
Kendra made eye contact with Miller and nodded. It was now or never. She kicked the gun 2 meters to the right of the armed man and hoped Miller knew what he was doing. Andrew couldn't believe it. Somehow that FBI agent had followed him all the way from San Diego. Had she followed him to David Wilkes' home, too?
"Good. Now slowly take your gun and set it on the ground," the man from the van said through his respirator.
There was a deadly calm to his voice that Andrew didn't like. The guy was going to kill her no matter what. The FBI agent bent down and placed her pistol on the blacktop.
"Good. Kick it over,"
the guy in the respirator said. The FBI agent caught Andrew's eye as she straightened. She'd seen him hiding behind the tree. The expression on her face was equal parts fear and resignation, but there was a spark of understanding, too. She was putting her life in Andrew's hands. Andrew grimaced and took aim in a two-handed grip at the man's back. There had to be another guy in the driver's seat, and that meant he'd have to be fast. He didn't have just one target to take out, but two. The FBI agent kicked her gun, and it skittered 2 meters toward the guy from the van. Andrew took a breath and held it. Time seemed to slow, and the world grew deadly quiet. His finger flexed on the trigger. The sound reached his ears, but dimly. He ran out of cover even as the man in the respirator cried out and fell. His gun went flying, but he began crawling to reach it. Andrew pulled the trigger again, and the man's struggles ceased. The van's wheels squealed as they slipped on the road. Andrew shot out the back tire with a bang, and the van lurched to one side before bouncing away at a reduced speed. He ran to catch it, grabbing the door frame and letting the van drag him. A bullet zipped past his ear. He pulled himself up and popped off a shot. Blood spattered the windshield and side window, and the driver slumped over the wheel. The van veered sharply off the road. Andrew jumped and rolled just before it slammed into a tree. Andrew lay there for a second, dazed and bruised, ears ringing from multiple gunshots. He did a quick mental inventory. No serious pain yet, but that didn't mean much. Shock could suppress the pain. He eased off the asphalt in time to see Roland creeping out from behind the tree where he'd left him. The FBI agent was running over with her gun in hand.
"Hey,"
she said. Andrew felt around for his pistol and then spotted it gleaming on the blacktop about 12 feet to his right. Too far to reach it. He was at her mercy now. She stopped beside him and holstered her weapon before dropping to her haunches to look him over.
"Are you okay?"
He nodded uncertainly.
"I think so."
"Nice shooting," she said. "And timing. Thanks for that. I owe you. Can you stand?"
"Yeah."
The woman held out a hand, and Andrew took it to haul himself up. He half expected to yank her off her feet, but she was stronger than she looked. Once he was on his feet, he limped over to his gun and picked it up.
"Damn, man,"
Roland said, staring at the scene. His eyes grazed the dead guy in the crashed van.
"We need to bug out before more of them come."
"We need to get to that warehouse," Andrew countered.
"My car is damaged," the agent said.
"We'll take my truck," Andrew said as he limped over to the guy in the spray painter's mask. He pulled the mask off and held it out to Roland. "Put it on."
"Yeah,"
he nodded quickly.
"Good idea."
Andrew headed for the van. He tried a light jog and was relieved to find that the pains in his legs were only bruises, not sprains or breaks.
"Where are you going?"
the agent asked. He returned with the driver's mask dangling from one hand.
"It's a bit bloody, but it should keep the toxins out of your lungs," he said, nodding to the fog still drifting through the trees.
The FBI agent wrinkled her nose at the mask and shook her head. Andrew shrugged and put it on himself.
"Suit yourself," he said in a muffled voice. "Let's go."
24. Roland. 3 days left.
"Shouldn't we be a little more cautious?" Roland asked.
Andrew wasn't messing around. He was driving the truck straight towards the warehouse, and Roland had to duck to keep his head from slamming into the vehicle's ceiling as they bounced around the rough road.
"You saw the boat leave just like I did. The drones were following them, too," Andrew said.
"That doesn't mean all of them are gone," the woman added.
"Who the hell are you, anyway? You guys know each other?" Roland asked.
They'd worked in unison as if they'd been partners in crime for years.
"She's FBI," Andrew said sharply through his blood-speckled respirator.
The entire look was so post-apocalyptic movie, Roland slunk away, trying to gain distance from the man. The woman glanced over and forced a smile.
"Special Agent Kendra Baker," she said with a nod.
"I guess titles don't really hold any meaning these days,"
Roland told her, her brows furrowed in confusion.
"Why do you say that?"
she asked.
"Because the world is ruined. Have you looked around? People killing each other in the streets, toxic fog, acid rain. The third largest hurricane ever to hit the Caribbean last night, and that's only the beginning. We're doomed, lady, doomed!"
He pulled his cap off and ran a hand through his thick hair.
"We might survive," Kendra said firmly. "Doubt it. This is it. The big one. Once the quakes start, the tsunamis will roll in, the volcanoes will activate, and half the world will be covered in 6 inches of ash. Man, it's going to be a nightmare. That's why we need to find out what Hound's doing."
Roland's excitement was ramping up, and his voice cracked as he shouted.
"What are you going on about?" Kendra asked. "Who's Hound?" "Lewis Hound,"
Roland said.
"The billionaire?"
Kendra asked.
"Very good. What does he have to do with all of this?"
"I'll make it a quicker story," Andrew started. "The kid went on for an hour about it, and this was the gist. Lewis Hound has been quietly building something in the middle of the ocean for the last few years. Roland managed to track the last shipping point to this very warehouse. He's also seen people being ferried out to bulk carriers by armed men and witnessed them departing from shore."
"The missing persons case I'm working on leads here,"
Kendra said, her voice low.
"Then your daughter?"
Andrew nodded from the driver's seat. They arrived at the gates, and Roland noticed Andrew scanning the air for drones.
"Do you think they're all gone? What about more guards?"
Kendra asked.
"They're all gone. Those guards were their last line of defense, but I suspect we're not going to find much in the warehouse either."
The gates were the kind you needed to be buzzed into before the electric rollers moved it to the side. Roland braced himself as he felt the truck begin to lurch forward. Andrew didn't ease up. Instead, he accelerated as they neared the gates, and the truck busted through with a bang and a clatter. They drove over the mess and kept moving for the edge of the warehouse.
"That's one hell of an entrance,"
Kendra said.
"So you're saying this place is owned by the billionaire Lewis Hound, and that he's built something in the water? And that he kidnapped people from around the country and brought them here? To what end?"
"You're the special agent, you tell us," Andrew said.
"There are only a few things it could be," Roland told her. An underwater bunker set to avoid and survive the coming years of devastation above ground, or a ship like Noah's Ark made to travel the world in search of a safe home after the events transpire.
And the people are there to repopulate the Earth? Scientists, doctors, farmers, but what about the others? Your daughter is, what, 15?
Kendra asked Andrew. 14. He said as they arrived at the edge of the immense warehouse. Andrew hopped out in seconds, his gun in his hand. Roland waited for the two armed professionals to assess the area before venturing from his seat. He grabbed his backpack with his laptop in it and joined them as they moved for the side door.
What do they want with her?
Kendra asked. I have no idea, Agent.
Kendra, just call me Kendra,
she told him. Roland watched as Andrew tested the door lever. It turned clockwise and he tugged it open. He glanced at the two of them, surprise in his eyes. Guess they weren't expecting company. The ocean was loud today, angry waves lapping against the dock a quarter mile from the warehouse. The building was even larger, being so close to it, and Roland's gaze ran a line up the outer wall, settling on the ceiling 100 feet or so up. He suddenly felt exposed out here beside the structure and silently urged Andrew to enter the premises. The Marine did, with the FBI agent close behind. Both of them had their guns raised. The woman, Kendra, was clearing her throat, the toxic fog getting to her. Hopefully it would be better inside, or Roland would have to be forced to offer his respirator to her for a bit. It wasn't something he wanted to do, especially with his asthma. Step inside, Roland. Andrew's head poked through the doorway and Roland jogged over. The facility was dimly lit without power. Only a compact line of windows near the roof overlooking the ocean aided them. The natural light exposed the empty warehouse floor. There was next to nothing inside. It even appeared as though someone had washed the entire concrete pad after evacuating. Roland instantly knew this project was run by someone fastidious. A couple of skids stood stacked along the far wall, and two forklifts were parked, their power charging cords plugged into 240-volt sockets. Rows and rows of empty red shelving lined the other half of the facility, the end caps labeled with a structured nomenclature. Roland let a low whistle out. He was impressed.
"What is it?" Andrew asked, glancing wearily at him.
"This place... it's the real deal. These guys were clearly pros in the supply chain game. No wonder the paperwork was done so precisely. There were a dozen company names under Umbrella Corps, ordering supplies from suppliers around the world. All the goods ended up here after making stops in various hubs around the United States."
Roland pointed to the far side of the room. Tall robotic arms and machinery sat powered down in dead silence.
"Look, manufacturing bays."
"What does that mean?"
Kendra asked.
"It means they built some of the stuff here and shipped it out to the facility," he answered.
"And where is that?"
she asked.
"If we knew that, we wouldn't need to be in here right now," Roland said.
Andrew seemed impatient. The man had one purpose in life, that much was clear, to find his daughter. Roland didn't blame him, but he couldn't quite grasp the drive. He'd never had someone in his life to care so much about, at least not since his grandma had left the world.
"Let's keep moving. Where would this computer be?" Andrew asked.
"No idea. Let's start with the rooms," Roland said, and Kendra was already taking the lead, walking toward the rear doorway. "Let's separate. It'll go faster," she said. "If it's just the same, I'll stick with you," Roland told her, hating how weak it made him sound.
"Better weak than dead." She didn't argue, but he saw the slight grin on her face, mocking him. He was used to it.
"I'll check out these ones," Andrew called from the other side of the warehouse.
The first room was dark, and Kendra flipped a light switch on when she entered. She scanned the room from behind her gun, and Roland saw it was a janitorial closet. Stacks of paper towel and cases of toilet paper sat in neat rows. Various cleaning chemicals were color-coordinated on a metal rack. Without a word, she stepped out, bumping into Roland and waving him away with a frown. The next room was empty. The following were bathrooms, large, clean stalls for the warehouse workers. They met Andrew again in the corner of the rear storeroom, and he wasn't wearing his used respirator.
He held out three fresh ones and passed two over. Roland happily tossed the borrowed one to the side and slid this one over his head, letting it rest around his neck.
"Any luck?" he asked the Marine.
"Nothing resembling a computer room yet, but it looks like the building goes on over there."
Andrew pointed to a double door to the right of the manufacturing bays, and they crossed the space, their footsteps echoing in the vast, empty room. Kendra pushed through the doors and waved Andrew through. Roland took the rear and was surprised to see a large living space. There was a pool table, televisions on the walls, a coffee bar, and games and books stacked in bookshelves.
"What is this place?"
he asked.
"This is where they gave their captives a sense of normalcy," Andrew said.
"He's right. They were trying to make them feel safe, comforted."
Kendra walked to the pool table and ran a finger along the wooden ledge. She pushed an errant ball into a side pocket and kept walking.
"I suspect we'll find the accommodations nearby."
She was correct. There were two sizable rooms, one presumably for men and one for women. Each held about 50 bunks, stripped clean of linens and pillows. Roland's stomach churned at the idea of being trapped in there with so many other people not knowing your fate. But maybe these were the lucky ones. Andrew shouldered past Roland, nearly knocking his backpack off. He strode through the bunks as if searching for one his daughter might have been sleeping on. He stopped and turned to face Roland, his eyes intense and dark. "Find the computer. We need to figure out where he took them."
"I'm trying. Let's keep moving," Roland said.
After stumbling upon an immaculate commercial kitchen and dining hall, they found the employees' area. The metal door was locked, and a keypad hung beside the handle on the wall. Andrew fiddled with it, but it wasn't going to budge. He pulled back like he was about to attempt to kick open the solid metal door, and Roland reached out, grabbing the man's shoulder.
"Let me try something first."
Roland set his pack on the ground and pulled a small flathead screwdriver from the front pouch. He pried the casing of the control box apart, revealing wires and a metallic panel. He analyzed it, finding it was more rudimentary than he'd expected.
"They could have made this a little more challenging,"
he mumbled to himself and stuck his tongue out the side of his mouth as he cut two wires. He held his breath and tapped the loose ends. The door buzzed, and a red light flashed on the panel. Kendra pressed the lever and the door opened for them.
"Nice work, Roland,"
she said, and he couldn't help but smile at the praise from the pretty FBI lady. It wasn't every day he was complimented. Or ever.
"It'll be in here,"
Roland said with a confidence he'd been missing minutes ago. It was nicer on this side of the complex, and he gazed over the electronics and fancy bar setup with leather seating and a boardroom table. Beyond the open area was a surveillance room. Dozens of screens lined the wall, none of them currently activated. That gave Roland hope there was no one watching the warehouse any longer. Why bother? It was empty, its purpose served. He found what he wanted at the end of the room. A black console sat there, unplugged from the server he knew would have been taken. He could only hope there was enough ghost data on the box to roll with.
"This is it."
He took a seat in a cheap office chair and pulled his laptop out, joining the two devices via a cable. The other two lingered behind him, Andrew imposing with his arms crossed, his gun still in hand. Kendra's Glock was holstered, and she looked at Roland with anticipation, a sense of excitement. No one spoke as he went through the motions, searching for information that was clearly wiped from the device.
"Damn it. This is going to take some time,"
Roland told them. He was sure he'd be able to find out what he needed, but it would be tedious.
"How long?"
Andrew asked, no sense of patience in his voice.
"An hour, maybe three," Roland said.
Andrew slapped a meaty paw onto the desk, shaking it.
"We don't have that kind of time."
"What else can we do? Even if we find this location, how are we traveling there?"
Kendra asked. Roland watched as Andrew's eyebrows lifted.
"Eureka.
We have a regular Archimedes in the house,"
Roland said with a chuckle.
"What the hell does that mean?"
Andrew asked angrily.
"Water displacement. Old Greek guy."
"Nothing?" Roland started, but realized it wasn't worth it.
"Eureka. It's a town a little way up the coast."
Andrew's phone was out, and Roland saw a map appear on the screen.
"There it is."
He pointed to a faint dot on the coastline map.
an hour at the speed limit, but I won't be driving that slow.
What's in Eureka?
Kendra asked. There's a Marine Corps recruitment station, also a U.S. Coast Guard base, if I'm not mistaken. We need a boat. They should have them, Andrew said, already heading for the door.
You guys are leaving me here alone?
Roland shouted as he heard Kendra chasing after Andrew.
Find me those details.
She threw a business card on the desk.
Text us the coordinates and we'll return for you in a couple of hours.
Roland stared into her big brown eyes. They were deadly serious.
Don't fail. We need you to do this for us.
He gulped dryly and nodded as she ran from the surveillance room.
Better start hustling,
he said out loud, and soon the only sound inside the entire complex was that of his fingers clicking on his laptop keyboard. 25. Kendra, 3 days left. Kendra slung her seatbelt on as Andrew Miller ripped around the parking lot with his truck, the tires squealing as he peeled away from the large complex.
Don't kill us before we have a chance to find anything out, she warned.
He didn't reply, but she did notice his foot ease off the pedal, if only slightly. How did you find me? Andrew asked without looking at her.
I saw your handiwork at Wilkes's house, she started.
He was a bad guy, Andrew told her.
I assumed as much. I've seen enough video of him trailing our missing persons that I knew he was clearly involved, but I didn't realize at what level.
Kendra kept the window up and had her respirator hanging below her chin. Andrew did as well. You thought I was the ringleader, he said, and it didn't sound like a question. She sighed in agreement.
For a moment, I wasn't sure. Your story didn't add up. A missing girl when the rest were mostly adults and skilled specialists.
Andrew finally cocked his head to the side and met her stare. I'm not sure what to tell you except that Wilkes was a piece of crap.
I know. Did you free the woman? She asked.
I cut her loose, but she took off before I could help, he admitted.
Good.
What about you? You didn't answer my question.
I saw your truck at the coffee shop, then tearing away from Mr. Tesla's, she said.
Mr. Tesla, Andrew laughed.
That's what I called him before I knew his name,
she told him, feeling mildly embarrassed. It's a good name.
I found you at the motel and hid a tracking device on your truck.
She pulled out her phone and it showed the blinking light moving along the highway as he drove up the coast. There was a scattering of cars on the side of the highway, and she could see pieces of the ocean behind open pockets of fog as they drove higher in elevation. Then nothing as they lowered on the undulating roads. I should have been more careful, he said. But I'm glad you're here. I can use all the help I can get.
How did you find the strange kid? She asked.
The truth was, Roland was probably only a few years younger than her, but with his disposition and eclectic style, he felt a decade her junior. Andrew filled her in about the missing laptop from Wilkes and how he couldn't access it, so that was what she'd been seeing through the binoculars at the restaurant the night before. It confirmed her suspicions. She was glad Andrew wasn't who she'd speculated. He was gritty, on the edge right now, and she noticed him clenching his jaw tight every minute or so. She guessed there were dark secrets in his closet, and she wasn't about to try to pry them out.
I killed a man a couple of days ago, she told him after 5 minutes of silence.
Yeah? He asked, seeming surprised by her news.
He was trying to take a van from a woman and her kids, Kendra said.
Good.
Good?
That you shot him. The world's not going to be pretty from now on, and the fewer dirtbags out there, the better it's going to be, he said. Kendra wasn't sure she liked his vigilante justice demeanor, but he was on the same side as her. Jurisdiction and law were likely things of the past.
It wasn't my first kill.
She subconsciously ran a hand to her left shoulder where the scar remained. It had been a bloody day, one that had left behind more than a physical scar. He didn't press for more details, and she liked him more for it. She could see the body counts in his posture, in the way he averted his gaze from her eyes. He was a trained killer. What's your story? He asked.
Kind of a broad query, isn't it? She replied.
What's a woman like you doing chasing after a case when the world is ending? Anger rose inside her veins. pulsing outward with each beat of her heart. A woman like me? That's not what I meant. What did you mean?
A person. An FBI agent. Jesus, you know what I'm saying. He stammered.
The fact that he grew uncomfortable set her at ease, and she relaxed.
I had nowhere else to go.
No husband? Kids? He asked.
Nope.
Parents are on their way to Houston. She stared out the window, noticing the fog was growing thinner the farther north they went.
You? Other than the daughter.
Only a bitter ex-wife and her new husband. I'm okay with him meeting his maker, but...
He stopped, and Kendra noticed his knuckles turn white as he gripped the steering wheel tightly.
But what?
Selena. Used to think she was the love of my life. Hard to leave her behind like this.
He said softly, surprising Kendra with his vulnerability.
What happened?
She knew she'd gone too far, but he'd started the topic.
The same thing that always happens. Me. I screw it up.
He didn't elaborate, and she didn't ask him to. The ground vibrated, shooting a tremor through the earth. The truck lurched a bit to the left toward the opposite lane, and Andrew quickly compensated. No one else was on the road, so at least they didn't have to worry about a head-on collision.
Earthquake,
Kendra said.
Let's hope that's all we see.
I doubt it. It was small and likely only the beginning, Andrew said.
They kept moving more slowly now, as if he could sense more danger up ahead.
I'm impressed,
she told him.
By what?
You. You managed to make it all the way here, and we might actually find your daughter,
Kendra said, meaning every word.
That's a long shot, he said.
Still, it's more than most people could do. It's more than I was able to do,
she said.
You made it.
Only because I trailed you, she said glumly.
That's a skill. You adapted, went with your gut, and made it the same as I did. Mine was a fluke, too. If Roland hadn't been here, or if his website hadn't been working, I would have been driving around in circles somewhere else.
The town was ahead. A few billboards for chain restaurants and low-end hotels lined the treed edge of the ditches. Kendra didn't know what to expect from the town and was almost surprised to see stoplights at all. Once they entered the city limits, they could no longer see the water, and Andrew drove more slowly, probably trying to get the lay of the land. It was desolate. The streetlights flickered on, even though it was only noon, a mixture of the overcast sky and the dense fog lingering in the air.
The recruiting office was in the mall, he said, pointing to his left.
She followed his finger over to a strip mall with the usual businesses' signs showing them what to expect from the main road.
When you said marine office, I was kind of hoping it was somewhere we could hop onto a destroyer and arm ourselves to the gills,
Kendra told him. He laughed.
More like the kind where you stamp paperwork and measure recruits for clothing sizes.
Where's the Coast Guard?
She asked. He passed his phone over and showed her the long, skinny peninsula.
We have to cross a bridge and backtrack.
There's no other way?
Not if you want a decent boat, he told her.
There were a few cars stopped without visible damage and some completely demolished in the next intersection, and Kendra idly scanned the area, trying to see if she could spot any people. It seemed devoid of life, like this was a picture of the world to come. It hit her then how real and dire their situation was. The ground rumbled again, and she heard the grinding of the road as it split open behind them. She craned her neck and watched a lamppost as it crashed down in front of their truck. Andrew cursed and slammed on the brakes, sending her flying forward. Her seatbelt snapped taut, holding her from hitting her head on the dash. The truck came to a halt and the ground shook again, this time with slightly less ferocity. The road shifted in response, and Andrew drove forward, narrowly avoiding sinking into the crevasse that had opened up. A car parked on the side of the street fell in, swallowed like a rock into a pond.
"Are you okay?"
he asked. Kendra patted her chest instinctively and nodded.
"We have to keep moving. There isn't going to be much time."
"For what?"
"That was a decent quake. We're right on the San Andreas fault line, Andrew. Tsunamis are a real threat here."
She leaned over him and looked toward the ocean, which was blocked from her view by half a mile of industrial properties.
"Wouldn't that send the waves out into the water?" he asked.
Kendra didn't know enough about it to be sure, but she'd seen enough graphs and images on the TV over the last week to have an idea.
They're saying multiple fault lines are active. We don't know that the earthquakes are starting here. They might be coming from the middle of the ocean, or Japan, for all we know.
We don't have time to reach the Coast Guard. Damn it, we'll have to check the local harbor and hope there's something useful still docked there.
He pressed the gas, careful to avoid the jagged cracks in the asphalt. With a sharp turn, he swerved past a grocery store, steadily driving faster as the roads cleared out. He stopped at an intersection, and Kendra checked the map on his phone.
Go left. There's a shipping company on the water 2 blocks further. Maybe something's docked there, she suggested, and Andrew nodded.
A minute later, they pulled into the parking lot and saw the empty pier.
Marina will be a few blocks over. If there isn't anything large enough, we can borrow whatever we find and head to the Coast Guard from there, Andrew suggested. He tore down Waterfront Avenue, narrowly missing a cat that darted in front of him. The ground shook again violently, and Kendra half expected a kraken to rise from the ocean. They exited the truck, and Andrew pointed to the peninsula to their left. The bridge was almost overtopping them on the right, and that meant he was accurate. They were running out of time.
We need a cruiser, something with the biggest engine we can find. It has to be strong enough to withstand a little battering and have enough power to move us quickly.
Andrew headed for the marina where dozens of boats were docked. Most of them were covered boats, though a few fancy sailboats stood out among the others. The whole area was gated, but Kendra knew they could pass through with ease. He made for the fence when something caught her ears.
I don't think that's a great idea.
Kendra's breath caught in her chest. The waves were loud, their sound terrifying. And then she saw it rising above the peninsula.
The tsunami. It's coming.
Andrew stared at the inevitable rush of water for a second before his eyes snapped to hers.
We need to find high ground.
26. Lewis. 3 days left. Lewis Hound stared at the screens in the drone monitoring room. There were hundreds of them divided across a dozen different security stations, but he had his eyes fixed on just one in particular. It showed a bird's-eye view into his warehouse on the Lost Coast. A young man sat hunched over a desk in the warehouse control center. Lewis leaned forward to zoom in on the screen sitting atop that desk.
Shit. He's using a data recovery program, Eric Keller said. I told you we should have killed him.
I thought we erased all of the data when we left, Lewis said.
We did, but nothing is ever really erased, not until it's overwritten. We should have taken all of the servers with us.
No, we have weight and storage limits to think about. There's no point in taking more than we can carry.
Well, then, we should have melted the ones we left behind, Eric said.
We couldn't have known they'd find the warehouse.
We had a clue when one of the guards went missing, Eric argued.
Lewis shrugged. It doesn't matter. It's too late. Even if people found this place, who could actually reach us in time?
How about the three idiots who were busy poking through our servers?
Lewis smiled. It was interesting to hear an idiot call other people idiots. Let them come. I've already sent a team for Roland.
Eric's brow furrowed in confusion, and he scratched his chin through his beard.
Why do you care about him?
Lewis glanced over to the screens.
He's important. Everyone I chose is here, but Roland is the one who got away.
One man is worth risking an entire security team? We have enough people to worry about as it is. You should forget about the kid.
You forget, Mr. Keller, that everyone here was chosen for a reason. They're all pieces of a puzzle that fit together into a perfectly unified whole. Even if you can't see how the pieces fit, just trust that they do. Trust me. But he wasn't going to let it go.
What is it about them that fits? Eugenics?
Lewis nodded. Among other things.
Such as?
Knowledge, Mr. Keller. Preserving the human race isn't only about people. It's also about preserving their knowledge. Roland has unique skills that the others will need, skills that he must pass on to future generations.
A future generation of hackers, Eric snorted. Just what we need.
Yes, that's exactly what they'll need, Lewis said, missing the note of sarcasm in Eric's voice.
They?
Sir, you say that like you're planning to leave us.
Leave you? Lewis shook his head. No, that's not my purpose. I must shepherd you all through the coming storm to safety. We can't have humanity going extinct, now can we, Mr. Keller?
No, sir, Eric replied.
Andrew. Andrew and Kendra ran back to his truck as fast as they could. Andrew kept glancing toward the islands in the bay and the peninsula beyond. A frothing wall of water was roaring over the peninsula, sucking low-rise one- and two-story buildings under and knocking down trees. It was still far away, but he could hear it coming, like a distant roll of thunder. The peninsula would slow it down, but it was only a matter of minutes before the tsunami crossed the bay and hit them, too. Even if it wasn't moving fast by then, it would be carrying plenty of debris, and it would flood the entire region.
High ground. We have to find. His thoughts trailed off and his heart sank as he noticed that all of the buildings in Eureka were just one or two stories high.
They reached his truck and he turned the key, overcranking the ignition.
Drive!
Kendra said. Andrew stomped on the gas and raced down the divided coastal road. The truck skidded through a flashing yellow traffic light and then he braked and hooked a right at the next. The tires squealed and Kendra braced herself.
You're going to wreck us,
she screamed as they careened toward the sidewalk and a ransacked convenience store.
Let me drive, Andrew said through gritted teeth.
The truck jumped the curb and mowed over a trash can before Andrew regained control and stomped on the gas again. They flew along a two-lane road, running flashing yellow stoplights and stop signs at almost 100 miles an hour.
You need to slow down,
Kendra cried, gripping her thigh and the door in white-knuckled fists.
Relax, I've got this.
She let out a shaky breath as they flew past homes, small businesses, and restaurants. A gas station and a church were coming up. Andrew debated the church. It looked to be about 3 stories with the steeple.
There,
Kendra pointed up ahead to a boxy concrete building that was 4 stories high. There was a big blue cross at the top next to the name, St. Peter's Hospital.
Best we're going to find.
Andrew slammed on the brakes as they came within sight of the parking lot entrance. It was up a slight hill. He took them through another skidding turn up the ramp and crashed through a boom gate. They lurched to a stop in front of the ER and Andrew shifted into park and threw his door open, not even bothering to turn off the engine first.
Let's go,
he said, barely remembering to grab his gun from the door before he jumped out of the driver's seat and sprinted for the hospital. The approaching wave sounded like a freight train. The ground was shaking and car alarms were going off, only to be suspiciously silenced a split second later. Andrew spun around just before he reached the sliding glass doors of the ER to wait for Kendra. She raced by him in the same instant, her eyes wild with fear.
Get inside!
She screamed. Hers wasn't the only scream he heard. A handful of other people were running into the parking lot, converging on the entrance. Behind them, Andrew saw the tops of a row of silver oak trees that lined the street shiver and then vanish with a crashing roar. Then came a wave of cars, bobbing on a muddy black river.
The doors won't open!
Kendra screamed. Andrew whirled around to see at least 8 others hammering on the glass with their palms and fists. 3 of them had their fingers worked into the gap trying to pry them open.
Stand back!
He yelled. The crowd parted momentarily and he aimed his gun at the doors, pulling the trigger 3 times fast. One of the doors shattered under the barrage in a pile of gleaming pearl-sized fragments.
Everybody inside, he said, but no one had to be told.
They surged through the broken door, pushing and shoving each other in their hurry to escape. It only took a few seconds, but it felt like forever. Andrew watched the swirling river of debris go racing by the hospital and down the street. Water was pouring steadily up the short hill into the parking lot, rising fast. His heart rate rose with it. A frothing wave broke over the body of his truck, spraying above the roof and raging on to the entrance of the ER. Kendra grabbed his arm and pulled him into the darkened waiting room before it could reach them. The water hit them anyway, spraying through the broken door like a giant fire hose. It knocked them over, followed by several others running down the corridor up ahead. Rocks and debris pelted Andrew, and his mouth and nose filled with grit and salt water. He pushed off the floor, coughing and gasping for air. He grabbed Kendra's arm and yanked her up, bracing himself against the front desk to remain standing amidst the river now raging through the hospital.
We have to get higher.
The leader of the survivors was bracing himself in the open door of a stairwell and waving people toward him.
Come on.
Andrew stumbled ahead,
with Kendra's arm around his waist for support. He clung to the desk and then to the walls to avoid falling over, but it wasn't enough. They slipped and fell several times along the way, as did several of the others. The survivors were crying and screaming to each other as they went. One man was pushing a couch ahead of him, using it like a walker as his daughter clung to the edge of it like a life raft. They crashed into the open door and jumped through into the stairwell with a splash. The man who'd been holding the door disappeared, but the couch was lodged in the doorway, holding it open. Andrew and Kendra were the last to get there. He helped her over the back of the couch ahead of him, just in time to hear something like a bomb going off. Windows exploded all throughout the first floor, and a wave of water as high as the ceiling came barreling into the corridor.
Shit!
Andrew leapt over the couch and landed hard in a puddle of dirty water about 2 feet deep on the other side.
Come on!
Kendra screamed down to him from the second floor landing. The flood tore past the doorway, ripping the couch away and blasting into the stairwell before Andrew could even blink. The torrent slammed him into the concrete wall opposite the door, dazing him, and then the flood whipped him around like a ragdoll 20 times fast. He kept seizing the metal banister before his hands were ripped away. His head slammed into something hard, and he swallowed a mouthful of dirty salt water. His lungs burned and heaved, and he felt himself drifting away in the cold, black water. His body grew blissfully numb, as though he'd fallen off the wagon after a spectacular bender. Oblivion beckoned to his battered brain. He struggled to resist, but suddenly he couldn't remember why that was important. He'd been searching for something, or was it someone?
27. Roland, 3 days left.
Whoever had done the cleanup was impressive, and Roland would have delighted in meeting them to see how they'd accomplished hiding the files so well. Of course, he was better, and after a few hours of banging away at the borders, he found what he was searching for. The breach was tiny, almost like an impossible entrance into a solitary time stamp of the data. It would do the trick. The fog had crept through the warehouse beneath the bay doors and through the edges of the doorways. Roland now wore his respirator after the fumes had nearly made him lose his breakfast. The ocean was loud. While his program was plucking and prodding as per his instructions, he decided to take a stretch and see what was going on outside. He meandered through the staff quarters and ended up at the main warehouse. From there, he opened a bay door, and it lifted with the sound of a rolling chain. What he saw was ominous. The water was churning, the sky pitch black beyond. It looked like hell's mouth was about to come swallow him whole, and he fought the urge to run. He had a job to do, and people were relying on him. For once in his life, it wasn't only about him. Sure, he didn't know Andrew and Kendra from Adam and Eve, but he felt an uncanny obligation to them and the missing group of people. He also needed to uncover what Hound had done, and why 2 assassins had been sent to his house to kill him. Had Hound's people found out he was searching for them? Had he left a trail of breadcrumbs? The only person that knew anything was Pied Piper 19, and Roland had been dealing with them for years now. He couldn't fully trust an online name, but if he could, it would be Pied Piper 19. He had no idea if it was a man or woman, but it didn't matter. Their information during the last 2 years had led him to this spot, so he could find the coordinates for the secret project. He was so close he could smell it. Except he couldn't smell much at the moment, not with the respirator nuzzled over his nose and mouth. The fog had dissipated slightly, and Roland thought he could see a shiny glimmer in the air, 100 feet or so up. As quickly as he'd spotted it, whatever it was, vanished. Panic hit him in a flash. Had that been a drone? Or maybe nothing. A glint of sunlight from above, pushing through the clouds. Then the fog. Roland walked out farther away from the building, hoping to find it again, and realized his stupidity. If there was a drone watching the warehouse, he was surely being filmed by the thing. He ran back, heading for the open bay door, when the ground shuddered so hard he fell to his knees, scraping them against the cold concrete. His hands spilled out in front of him, skidding on the rough surface.
What the?
He stumbled onto his knees and felt the ground rumble again. His hands weren't bleeding, only red and raw from the impact. He stood, feeling the ache in his joints as he limped the rest of the way inside.
He slammed the side of his hand against the button, closing the doors. Roland knew what to expect. A tremor of that size wasn't too devastating. It would stir the ocean, sending waves toward the coast. If anything stronger hit, he'd be in serious trouble hanging out inside this warehouse. He needed to obtain the coordinates and move inland. How far he had to be depended on the severity and placement of the earthquake. A bad one could travel as far as 10 miles inland, but he didn't expect quite that much damage from this quake.
"You have no wheels,"
Roland scolded himself for leaving his truck at the motel.
"Why are you so stupid?"
Then he remembered the white van, but Andrew had shot out the tire. What about the FBI woman's car? She'd said it was damaged, but to what extent? First things first. He hobbled through the maze of rooms and doorways until he returned to the surveillance room where his laptop was chugging away, his screen full of flashing images, the program searching for coordinates. It gave him a countdown saying there was only 10 minutes left. So far there was nothing popping up for his parameters. Roland heard a crunching noise as the earth trembled again and he ducked low, remaining under the desk. He doubted it would do much to combat the force of nature, but it was better than sitting out in the open. He pressed his body against the wall as he curled into a ball, his head between his legs. His hands shook, and he tried to convince himself to be strong, that they needed him. And eventually the shaking and terrifying sounds of shifting metal beams and the breaking coastline ceased. Roland waited another 2 minutes before poking his head up to find the room was still intact. Lewis Hound would have made this place far above code, and it had stayed in one piece so far. Roland doubted it would when the force of the coming tsunami hit. He had to be fast. The laptop chimed, showing him the result of his program searching Hound's cleared out systems.
"Holy crap, Raleigh, you did it, man!"
His fingers flew over the keys once again, and the numbers appeared on the screen in black text over the blue backdrop. They were coordinates, all right. He keyed them in and saw an empty spot in the Pacific Ocean.
"Gotcha."
He slipped his phone out and texted the numbers to Kendra. Before he put it away, he sent one more message.
"Need to leave the coast. Tsunami going to hit. Where are you?"
He didn't wait for a reply. He tossed the laptop into his backpack, slung it over his shoulders, and moved for the door. Two men stood in the warehouse wearing black vests and holding guns at hip level. They had respirators strapped to their faces.
"Roland Martin?"
one of them asked, his voice garbled behind the mask. Roland thought about pretending to be someone else, but they already knew it was him. He nodded slowly.
"You're coming with us,"
the same man said, as he lifted his gun in the air, aiming straight for Roland. He had a decision to make, and not much time. His pistol sat in the bag. He could try for it by pretending to put the bag on the floor, but these two were big guys, clearly trained where he wasn't. He'd lose the shootout, and then he'd never know the outcome of this whole adventure. He'd never find out if Earth was lost or what Hound had been up to. His curiosity almost outweighed his own self-preservation at this point. The second man walked toward him, gun raised. He was an ox of a man, half as wide as he was tall. Roland felt a sinking feeling in his guts. They weren't going to let him live.
"Give me your computer,"
the man said, his voice deep and menacing. Roland held his pack out and stuck his hand inside, contemplating grabbing the gun.
"Slowly,"
the man warned. Roland's fingers grasped the edge of the computer and he slid it out. The man took it in his big hands before it was all the way free, and he tossed it to the ground in anger. He stomped on it once, twice, three times, spreading out the pieces. Roland would miss that laptop. He'd built it himself, a sort of Frankenstein's monster of computers, and now it was gone. He'd have time to grieve later, if he wasn't mourning his own death.
"Phone."
"What?"
Roland asked.
"Phone."
"I don't have your number,"
Roland said without a hint of a smirk. The fist flew at his gut so quickly he didn't have time to clench. He doubled over, falling to the ground. The first man was there in a hurry, lifting Roland up. He fumbled in Roland's pockets and found it, dropping the thin hacker to the floor. The armed man opened the phone, about to search it when the tremors hit again. This time it happened with a bang. The warehouse base shifted, hard, and Roland was lifted away from the two men as the wall holding the bay doors crashed open, tearing apart at the seams. He took his chance and ran for the opening.
His legs still ached where he'd fallen on his knee, and his breaths were forced and shallow after having the air knocked from his lungs, but he pushed on. With a quick glance behind him, he saw the shorter man climb up the fissure and give chase. Roland really wished he had a car parked nearby, and scanned the area searching for the vehicle these two guards had arrived in. There wasn't one, and it hit him. They'd come from the ocean. They might be his only way out here. They had his phone, so he couldn't contact his allies to pick him up, even if he did escape. And Roland had absolutely no clue where to acquire a boat or what to do if he found one. He was desperate. He stopped suddenly and heard a bullet hit the ground beside his feet. He lifted his arms in the air and turned to the gun-wielding men.
"You can tell Hound you found me," he shouted. "I surrender."
He hoped using the billionaire's name would spark some hesitation to kill him. It worked like a charm. Even from this distance, Roland saw the effect at his casual use of the name. The aftershocks hit as the men arrived at his side, but they all managed to stay on their feet.
"Keep moving, kid,"
the huge guy said through his respirator. Roland pulled his mask over his own face, and they didn't stop him. The fog wasn't as thick at the moment, but he instantly felt better for the filtration. He had no way to calculate the Richter scale and the distance out it would have come from, but assumed they had only minutes before the wave came. "Get in the boat," the other said, shoving him forward onto the pier toward a 30-foot cabin cruiser.
"Are you sure that's such a great idea, fellas?"
Roland asked them as he pointed to the choppy water on the horizon.
"Shut up and do as we say,"
the ox of a man said. Roland didn't know what kind of boat it was, but he doubted it would be able to withstand the treacherous waters coming their way. He'd been seasick the few times he'd ever been on the water and dreaded the idea of going on the ocean. This whole time he hadn't let himself consider the actual journey from the coast to the hideout. But now that it was at hand, his ears started to ring, and he became lightheaded. They removed the rope from the dock, and the smaller guard moved the ship out. Already the water felt different to Roland, more energized, even nervous. Roland said a silent prayer to a god he wasn't sure existed. A mile ahead of them, the wall of water was growing closer to their boat with each tortuous breath. 28. Kendra. 3 days left. 1 second Andrew was right behind her, the next he was torn from the banister, flying across the stairwell.
"Keep moving,"
Kendra shouted to the small crowd above her. A man shoved his daughter forward, and Kendra scanned the area, searching for Andrew, as the water continued to rise in the open space. The water was cold, and her legs were instantly numb. She saw his limp body floating along the edge of the concrete wall and didn't hesitate. Kendra pushed off from the stairs, cutting through the murky salt water like a dolphin, and reached his side quickly.
"Andrew!"
She tried to shake him awake, but he was out like a light.
"Bring him here!"
The last man of the group had stayed behind, and Kendra feared they'd soon be underwater. The level was lifting them toward the ceiling, and she treaded water, the salt burning her eyes, as she dipped below the surface. With one hand clasped around Andrew's wrist, the other stroked vigorously through the water, pulling her slowly toward the steps. By the time she arrived, the level was higher, pulling her and the unconscious Marine under. She felt the tug from the man on the stairwell, and she was lifted free. She panted, spitting out ocean, and the two of them heaved Andrew up. He was heavy, limp like a soaked rag doll, but they managed to heft him to the top of the second floor.
"It's still coming!"
the man shouted over the cacophony of sounds echoing throughout the 3-story vestibule. He was right. Water continued up, licking Kendra's feet even on the second floor. She knew that outside would be worse, and she only hoped they could reach high enough to avoid drowning from it. She looped one arm under Andrew's armpit, and the stranger did the same. Together they kept moving, and eventually the others met them on the stairs to help. Everything happened so quickly, and soon they were pressing through the top floor doors. She slammed the 8-foot steel door shut, twisting the deadbolt, as if the floodwater had the ability to twist the lever. She fell to the floor beside Andrew, fully winded.
"What are we going to do?"
a woman asked. Her heavy mascara dripped in dark lines onto her ample cheeks. Kendra sat up, trying to assess the situation. There were 8 people with them, 3 women, 3 men, a girl maybe 8 years old, and a teenage boy. One of the women was on the floor, gripping her left ankle.
She rushed to Andrew's side and checked his pulse. Just as she was about to tilt his head up and start CPR, he spat out a lungful of dirty water and blinked his eyes open. He tried to sit up in a panic, but Kendra rested a hand on his chest.
"We made it,"
she told him calmly. Andrew glanced around, and she noticed him checking to see if his gun was still on him. It was, and so was hers, still seated in the holster.
"Is there another floor? One for staff, perhaps?"
Kendra asked, finding the strength to stand. Her thighs shook as she arrived on her feet, and she peered through the rectangular glass on the door leading to the stairwell. The water continued to climb, but slower now.
"It's the top. Who are you, and what are you doing in my Eureka?"
a man asked. Kendra didn't like the way his eye twitched when he gave the town a possessive "my." He was older, white with receding gray hair. His mustache was droopy, and he wore a short-sleeved yellow dress shirt with a black tie. It was a look everyone in the bureau used to wear 20 years ago.
"I could ask you the same question, Mr.—"
She lifted an eyebrow, waiting for a name.
"This is Jack Pennycoat, Eureka's mayor,"
an older woman said from behind the rest of the group. She leaned against the reception station, appearing far more composed than the others. They were in a pulmonary ward. Images of lungs with medical jargon hung on the walls. Yellow, green, and blue lines ran along the floors, parallel, before breaking apart in separate directions at a fork in the corridor.
"Why didn't you all evacuate?"
Kendra asked.
"Haven't you ever heard of a captain going down with his ship?"
Andrew asked, finally sitting up. His lips peeled out into a strange smile. Pennycoat scowled at the Marine.
"Nothing of the sort. This is all a bunch of hooey, if you ask me."
Kendra instantly wished the mayor was on the other side of this door. She could sense a troublemaker when she saw one. They needed to keep moving and leave this group behind. Her gaze drifted to the small girl clutching her father's arm. He watched Kendra with worried eyes.
"What's a bunch of hooey?"
Kendra asked Pennycoat.
"The world ending, that's what."
"What do you think just happened? That's not a rainstorm out there,"
Kendra told him.
"That's it. The water will recede and we'll rebuild. It's what a good city does."
He crossed his arms over his chest, and Kendra saw the older man near the vending machine shake his head.
"I should never have listened to you, Jack,"
the older man said.
"You didn't have to. I didn't force anyone to stay,"
Jack told him.